Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Mem. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 17 lines from the top of Daf Mem. In the Gemara text, you might notice a double underline followed by a diamond, Kiyosa Rav Dimi Omer Rav Yochanan. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we take advantage of one of the special features of the Shas Ozer, the marked Gemaras that you have in front of you, the Nosei / Mivneh, Nosei the topic heading, and Mivneh the structural note. You'll notice, of course, we feature a diamond and a double underline. The double underline introduces the initial speaker, in this case, Ki Osa Rav Dimi, and then a few lines later, Ki Osa Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. And the diamond is used to highlight Rabbi Yochanan. So you have two versions of Rabbi Yochanan in this discussion, and we note that there are Shnei Lishonos B'Divrei Rabbi Yochanan. There are two versions of Rabbi Yochanan. B'Kfias Yorshim L'Shachrir Eved, with regard to forcing heirs who inherited an estate to free a slave that they inherited, al smach divrei avihem b'shas misaso, based on the words of their father at the time of his death. Now the Gemara. Ki also Rav Dimi Omar Rav Yochanan. When Rav Dimi came, he reported that Rav Yochanan said, Misha Omar, Bishas Misoso. We're swiggle underline Bishas Misoso here, and in the next Loshon, the next version as well, so you can see the similar structure. Someone who, at the time of his death, said, Ploinis Shivchosi, so and so, my bond maid. He refers to a specific bond maid that he had in his possession. And he says to his children at the time of his death, Al yishtabdu ba li'achar moisi. Do not enslave her after my death. Well, if that's what was said, the halacha is, Kaifin es hayorshim v'kaisfin lo get shichur. We force the heirs to write a freedom document, a get shichur, a document setting her free. And when we speak about freedom of slaves, that refers to their becoming full-fledged Jews and able to marry a regular Jew. Omru lefonov Rabbi Ami Ravasi. They said to Rabbi Yochanan, and they're going to say something that indicates they disagree with Rabbi Yochanan, though the expression doesn't seem to be an outright disagreement, nevertheless it is. What do Rabbi Ami and Ravasi say to Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi, I ato moide she boneho avodim, do you not concede that her children will be slaves? What they're saying is that we do not force the heirs to set her free. She remains a bondmaid, and children that a shifcha, that a bondmaid produces, are slaves. We look at the Rashi, a few lines up from here in the Rashi commentary, I'ata moide, wouldn't you concede al yishtabdu, the expression that their father used, al yishtabdu, which you can see in the Gemara text, we have a dot underlining, eino loshon shichur, that's not an expression of setting free, velo loshon hefker, nor is it an expression of declaring her unowned, ela, all their father intended was lo yachrichua bavidosa, don't trouble her, don't encumber her with difficult tasks. Aval vlados hayotz mimeno me'ashav avodim hay, but children that she bears forth are slaves. Uva'amai kufin l'shachra, why would we force them, the heirs, to set her free v'afsidu vlados mikano labo? Shalot siva avihem kain, as a result of setting her free, then the children she bears are regular Jews, and the family, the heirs, will lose out on those vlados, those children. Let's turn back to the Gemara. Ki also Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda Rav Yochanan. This second version is coming, as Rashi says, to disagree with Rav Dimi and say that Rav Yochanan never said what was reported by Rav Dimi, but rather something totally different. What is Rav Shmuel's version of Rav Yochanan? Misha Omar B'Shas, Misha also someone at the time of his death says, Ploinis Shivchosi Kuras Ruach Ostoli, so-and-so of my bondmaids made my life Kuras Ruach pleasurable, enjoyable, pleasant. Yaselo Kuras Ruach, make her life pleasant. If that's what the father says, Kaifen es hayorshim v'oisin lo kiras ruach. We insist, we force the heirs to make her life pleasant. And then Rashi adds, if she doesn't achieve kiras ruach, pleasantness, without being freed, then we force them to free her. My taimo, why is that the case? Mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis. There's a special mitzvah, a fulfillment in fulfilling the desire, the words of the deceased. And as you can see, the deceased wanted her life to be pleasant, and if that's what it takes, namely to free her, then so be it. As we go on in the Gemara, you notice a new marking. You see a triangle, and on the side under our Nosei / Mivne heading, we indicate the triangles represent Shnei Lishonis Shel Amemar. There are two versions of Amemar. And if you skim ahead in the Gemara text, you'll notice two triangles. Also, we've numbered them, Roman numerals 1 and 2. So there are two versions of Amemar, Binyan HaMafkir Avdoi, regarding someone who declares his slave Hefker, unowned. Dien Le'evet Takona Achar Kach Al Yedei Shichor, that the slave, after that, has no solution, no Takona, vis-a-vis marrying into the Jewish people after his owner had declared him Hefker. Now the Gemara. Omar Amemar, Hamafkir Avdo, one who declares his slave unowned, Oysa Eved Ein Lo Takona, the slave has no solution to becoming a Jew enabled to marry a regular Jewess, even with a shtar, even with a shtar shuchur, my taimo. Why is that? Answer, gufe lo koni le. The slave is no longer owned, bodily owned by the master. He declared him unowned, so the master doesn't have any legal ownership over the slave. Isurhu de'iko gabe. The isur lo motzi makni le. What remains after the freeing of the declaration of hefker? What remains after that is the realm of isur. Isur is the ritual categorization of the slave as a slave, and the halachic ramifications of that are that he can't marry a regular Jewess. So by the master severing his kinyan, his ownership of the slave through hefker, the ritual bond of isur that remains is something that the master cannot bestow, transfer to the slave. Omer le Ravashi Lameimar. So Ravashi asks, Ameimar v'omar ulom Rabbi Yochanan, v'pchiyo barov v'nomar rav, echot ze v'echot ze yetze l'cherus v'tzoruch get shichur. You have major rabbinic authorities, Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, is saying, whether a master sanctifies his slave, or he is mafkir his slave, that's our case, the slave goes free, and he requires a get shichur, so that we see after hefker, a get shichur, a document of freedom, document of release is effective. Omar Le, so Amema responded, the fact that they said tzorach get shichur means as follows, tzorach, he needs it, V'ein lo takona, but it's not going to be effective. In other words, it's a lost cause. Yeah, it would be very nice if he could benefit from the shtar shichur. He needs it, so to speak. What do we mean when we say he needs it? He needs something to release him from his isur, from his slave status. But there is nothing that will be effective, even the document. Iko diamri, Omar Amemar. Now we have another version. Hamafkir avdoi umes. And we dashed underline umes to highlight the difference between this lashon and the previous lashon, the previous version. Here we describe an owner who declared his slave unknown and then the owner died. Also, eved ein lo takona. Such a slave has no solution, no hope, as far as being able to marry a Jewess. My taima, why? Gufe lo konile. There is no ownership of the goof, of the body of the slave. He's been freed. He's been released. He's been declared unowned. Isuru de ikagabe. All that remains by the owner at the time that he declared him unowned is the slave status, which we refer to as the isur, the ritual restrictions. The isur lebrei lomoras, and that is not something that lends itself to bequeathing, to inheritance on the part of the son, the heir. Omar le Rav Ashi lameimar. So Rav Ashi asks, v'ho ki also Rav Dimi Omar Rav Yochanan. We have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can parallel it with the arrow above. And there we saw Rav Dimi quoting Rabbi Yochanan, that a person who at the time of his death said, don't enslave my servant, we force the heirs to set the servant free. So we see that even though the master, the owner, died, the heirs are able to set him free. So how can you say that the heirs represent a situation of ein lo takona, that there's no solution? What about Rav Dimi or Rav Yochanan from before? We glance at Rashi. The Haki also Rav Dimi or Vechule. Rashi that we're looking at is a number of lines above where we are in the Gemara. The Kevin Yomar al Yishtab Duba, at the point that the father said, do not enslave her, the bondmaid, Poka Le Mamona Mino, the financial aspect of his ownership of the bondmaid, the slave, is released, is voided. The Kaomar, and it says, nevertheless, Yorshim Kaisvin Law Get Shichur, that the heirs release her through a freedom document. So Amemar says, listen, the Rav Dimi Ta'usahi, that quotation above of Rav Dimi, of citing Rav Dimi, that's a mistake. We pointed out in the discussion before, we saw Rav Amin Rav Asi saying that, and we through the Rashi, that the expression of Al Yishtabdu, do not enslave her, is not an expression of freedom. So that to suggest that we can learn from Rav Dimi a case of a slave achieving some level of freedom and then the heirs being able to set her totally free and enabling her to marry a Jew, that was all a mistake. Omar le my Tousa, so Rav Ashi says back to Amemar. What was the mistake over there? The father never used an expression of a proper expression of freeing, of setting free. Had the father used a proper expression, for example, had the father said Hare at bas chorin, and then died, the yorshim write a shtar shichur and set her free. Omar le, Amemar says back, Ano k'derav Shmuel bar Yehuda Sivirali. I hold like the second version, the second diamond above of Rabbi Yochanan, where there was never a story of a father setting free his bondmaid. The story was totally different. the story is a father saying, I want you to make life good for her. And we said that in the event that after he dies, the father dies and they inherit her, and they become the owner of her, if they find that there's no other way to make her life good, so then they set her free. So there's no issue, according to the Shmuel Bar Yehuda version, there's no issue of, let's say, a separation between the kinyan mamon, the monetary aspect of ownership of the slave, and the isur aspect. So they're in full control. And as Rashi says, the whole matter was dependent upon them. However, if you have a situation like Amemar described, of an owner setting or declaring his slave unowned and then dies, there we create a separation between the monetary aspect of ownership and the ritual slave status. And when you have an isolated situation of Esor, then Amemar claims there's nothing that can be done about that. It would seem to me, if you present this on a very, very superficial level, it's a type of all or nothing. If you have full ownership of the slave, monetary plus ritual, then you have the power to free her. But free her and enable the bondmaid or the slave to marry into the rank and file Jewish people. But once you split the two apart, as we saw through one declaring a slave unowned, without addressing the ritual aspect, the Esor aspect, which restricts the slave from marrying into the rank and file of the Jewish people, then you create a situation, an insoluble situation. The Gemara continues. Before we go into the text itself, let's take note of some of the features we have on the side and the margin of the Gemara. First of all, we have a topic heading, a nosei, Maisa im Ravina. We're going to have a story involving Ravina, Shinimkar, Ir shel Avodim, a city of slaves was sold, Shebaleim Hoyu Yisrael, the original owners were Jews, and this city of slaves was sold legoyim, sold to Gentiles. Umesu hagoyim, and the Gentile owners died. Ma legabi get shichur. What are we to say now regarding a get shichur, the freedom document? And I know we've mentioned this already many times. It might sound overly repetitive, but this freedom document would represent the ability, the, we'll say, ticket to their freedom and permission to marry into the rank and file of the Jewish people. We also have a mivne heading. You'll notice in the margin. First of all, we feature a trapezoid or volcano shape. This represents shnei meisim shoinim, two separate incidents. Aval mishutef lahem hino hatzorech lahasi get shichur. They're two separate incidents, but there is a common point, a common issue in these two stories, and that is the achieving or acquisition of a get shichur, attaining of a get shichur, of a document of release from servitude. We have another mivne note. A squiggle underline will appear. You'll see that will appear in the second. Actually, it's actually over here. You'll see it. This is designed lahokiel al hamakav bein Ravina v'Rabbanan. This enables us to more easily keep track of the give and take when there's a change in speaker. So the squiggle underline will appear in this section. The Gemara now. Hahu discarto de avdi. Discarto is a city. There was a city of slaves. These are slaves that were owned previously by Jews, and the city of slaves, the slaves in that community were sold to goyim, to Gentiles. So we have discarta de avdi, de izdabin lo'oyve kechom. Dizdab means it was sold to idol worshippers. And Rashi points out there is a law, a halacha that states one who sells his slave to an idol worshipper, the slave goes free. When we say the slave goes free, of course that means from a Jewish legal perspective, he's no longer considered a slave. in practical terms, if idol worshippers bought him, so they're going to enslave him. They're going to work with him, but as far as we are concerned, he's not a slave anymore. You'll ask, well, what difference does it make if he's going to have to work for the idol worshippers? The difference is, as we will see in the continuation of the story. Kolu marvaso basroi. Basroi means the latter ones. Then marvaso, for mar, the owner. Kolu, the word kolu ends, like vayuchulu hashamay voretz, finished off. In simple terms, the Gentile owners died. So we have now a city of slaves that originally were owned by Jews. In the interim, they were sold to Goyim. The Goyim, the Gentile owners, died. Osu lekamei de Ravina. These slaves came to Ravina with a desire to be allowed to marry into the rank-and-file Jewish people. Omar lehu, so Ravina recommended. He said to them, Zilu ahadru abnei marvisu kamoi, go seek out the children of your original owners, the Jewish owners, and request of them to write for you a shtar shichur, a freedom document. Omru lei rabbonon leRavina. So the rabbis responded to Ravino's suggestion with a question. V'omar ameimar, but did not ameimar say, hamafkir avda umeis, oisoi ha'evet ein lo itakona. When the a person that abandons or declares unowned his eved and then dies, the eved has no takona. There's no solution with regard to the ritual, or we call the isor status, after the owner's death and the sons inherit. They don't inherit the isor status, the ritual restriction status that applies to a slave. And that's what we saw here. The original owners had sold the slave to Goyim. So that's the equivalent of mafkir after declaring the slave unowned. Now the original owners are out of the picture. They're from the story, you can see they're dead. And the Goyim are out of the picture. All you're left with are the heirs of the original owners. According to Amemar, the heirs of original owners, when the slave was declared unowned, have no role to play. There's no solution. So how can you, Ravina, suggest going back to the heirs of the original owners? Omar Luhu, so Ravina says back, Ano k'Ravdimi Svirali. I hold like Ravdimi's approach, that even though there was avoidance of any financial connection, we said hafkoas momon, there was no poka momoino, nevertheless, we saw above in the Ravina approach that the Yorshim write a document of freedom. Omru lei, so the rabbi said back, the Ravdimi tousahi, the Ravdimi approach was mistaken. Omar luhu, Ravina says, what do you mean Ravdimi's approach was mistaken? My ta'usa de l'omra b'loshim shichur, that the father did not use an appropriate expression of freedom. He said, al yishtab duba. Ha, omra b'loshim shichur ha'chinami. Had the father said, hare at bas chorin, and then he dies, the yorshim are able to write a shtar shichur. And in our case, a slave was freed by virtue of the fact that they were sold to Goyim. The Hilchasa Keravina, and the Gemara rules like Ravina, that the Shtar Shichur that the heirs of the original owners would write would be effective. And now a second incident. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin, She Hikno Ha'odoin Chatzi Livnoi Hakoton, a slave that had been originally owned in partnership. One partner freed his holding of the slave, leaving the slave, half free. The owner of the second partner that had his own ownership of half of the slave, he then transferred his holding to his son. to his son that's a minor. She'eno bar kfiya bebeisin lo seis get shichur. Why did the master holding the his half of the slave do that? Because a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, as we are taught in an upcoming Mishnah, is forced, the owner who has that half is forced to free him. And with that, the owner feels he would be losing out. He's going to be forced to set him free. And he doesn't want to do that. He wants the slave to continue working. So what the owner does is he transfers ownership to his son, a minor. Now, the court cannot force a minor to set a slave free. Now, the Gemara. Hahu avda de betre. There was a slave owned by two. Kom chad minayu v'shachri lepalgei. One of the two owners arose and set free his half of the slave. In a case like that, by the way, the slave will work for the other master one day and work for himself and profit, keep his own profits on the next day, and work thusly in on alternating days, one day for himself and one day for the master. Omar Idoch, the second partner, said, Hashto Shami Beidina Bei Rabbonan, the rabbis are going to hear that I have a slave that's in effect Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, Umafsidu Le Minoy, and they're going to cause me a loss, namely, they're going to force me, as the Mishnah teaches later on Daf Mem Aleph Omen Aleph, to free him, and I don't want to do that. Ozel Akne Livnoi Kotten. So the partner, the remaining owner, transfers his share in the slave to his son that was a minor. And as such, the court isn't going to force the minor to free the slave. Shocha Rav Yosef Brei de Ravo, the Brei de Ravo Lekamei de Rav Papa. So Rav Yosef sent this incident, this case, to Rav Papa. Sholach Le, Rav Papa sent back. Kasher also Ken Yaselo, Gemulo Yoshiv Loi Baroshoi. As he did, we're going to do to him. We're going to pay him back in kind. In other words, Rav Papa has a plan that we're going to see to it that this Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, in fact, does get sent free. And by the way, why is it so important to have him freed? The answer to that is that as a regular slave, a fully owned slave, he can marry. He has a marriage option to marry a shivcha, a bondmaid. If he's totally free, so he has the option of marrying a regular Jewish woman. In this Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin state, he has no one available to marry. So the rabbis force the part owner to release his remaining half so that he can marry a regular Jewish woman. And in this case, we have this Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin remaining in that state because he's now owned by a minor, and the court doesn't force minors to release slaves. However, Rav Papa has a plan. Anan kimlon v'yanuka, we understand children, demikriva daite legabizizi, kids like coins. Mukminon le'apotropos, we're going to set up an executor. The executor is going to work on behalf of this minor to establish the market value of the slave that he is currently part owner of. How much is his holding worth? So the executor will determine how much the slave is worth. And we continue in the story on Amud Beis, top of Amud Beis, Umekarkish Leizuzi. We'll then take the coins we mentioned before and jingle them in front of the little kid, in front of the miner who's the owner. And that will get the kid to cooperate with us. We say, hey kid, you know, these coins will be yours if you play along with us. The Kosav Legita de Cheruso al Shmei, and the kid will then, we'll say, give his okay and order a freedom document to be written. Al Shmei, in his name. Now, whose name? There's a Machlokis Rashi and Tosfos regarding that. According to Rashi, it's the freedom document is written in the name of the minor. In other words, the minor is said to be freeing the slave. According to Tosfos, it's written in the name of the executor. But whatever the case is, we've created, Rav Papa says, we're able to create a situation that the Chatzi Evid, Chatzi Ben Choron will be freed, and the father's attempt to circumvent the Mishnah's teaching proved to be a failure. As we continue in the Gemara, we have some markings to explain. On the side, we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. The triangle highlights three brises. She habaylim matzirim shenosnu avodah moysodus leploni, where the owner of either slaves or fields announces that he gave his slaves or fields to so and so. For Rabbi Yochanan Masbir, you'll see that Rabbi Yochanan's name is double underlined. He will explain she hatzorois elu hayu biksav. He explains that what the Brisa says, Ha'omer, each Brisa begins with the word Ha'omer, one who says. The speaking is not really speech, it's not one, it's rather it's speaking through a document. He writes, Ha'im divrei habaylim toifsim. Does the fact that the owners wrote these statements out that we'll see in the Tanaic sources, does it take hold? Does it have legal impact? Before we go further to the next note, which is really relevant to the Brisa number 3, let's continue in the Gemara on the second line from the top of Omid Beis. Tanu Rabbonan Ha'oimer, one who says, and as we said, we're going to see after the source, Rabbi Yochanan points out, Kulam Bishtar, all of these Ha'omers are really in a document. But in the meantime, Ha'oimer Osisi Ploni Avdi Ben Chorin, a declaration that I made so-and-so a slave, a free man. The result? Osui ben Choren, he is free. Harehu ben Choren, that's what he declares. Harehu ben Choren, that is the result. He's free. A third scenario. Esenu ben Choren. Here we'll translate, but leave in mind that we have to be flexible as to the final understanding. Person says, I will make him free. Rebbe Oimer Kona, Rebbe says that takes effect, and he is going to be free. V'chom Omrim Lo Kona, it doesn't take effect. That all that is as Senu Ben Chorin, all is a promise to do something, but it doesn't have any legal binding. We look at Rashi together. Rashi, just a couple lines down from here. Esenu ben Chorin, Rabbi Yomer Kona, Dehochi Mashma. Esenu ben Chorin, B'shichru Zeh, Shani Moisir Lo Achshav. When you say, I am going to make him free, the implication is, I'm going to make him free with the freedom document that I am giving to him now. Ve'anan mugmino lo, B'dekosav le, Hani Lishni, B'shtoru, Mosar le. And later in the Gemara, we see that he wrote these things in a document. Now, the next Rashi, V'chachom Omrim Lo Kona, She'ein Zu Elo Havtocha. By saying, E'esenu Ben Chorin, all you are doing is promising. She'esenu Ben Chorin, Li'achar Zman, that later on, I will set him free, U'bishtar Acher, in another document. V'adayin Lo Osa, and he hasn't done that yet. So, we now turn back to the Gemara. Omer of Yochanan V'kulon Bishtar. All of the points mentioned in this Tanaic source were actually written in a document. And Rashi pointed out, the Rashi that we read, they were written in a document and given to the receiver. In this case, to the slave. Tonu Rabbonon. Ho'imer nosati sod eplonis leploni. One who declared that he had given a particular field to so-and-so, nesuna leploni. It is the receiver's. Hare hi shalo. The result is it belongs to so and so. Etneno leploni. This is similar, and you can notice the numbering that we have here is similar to the numbering above. So this third case is similar to the third case in the previous source. It says, I will give it to so and so. Rebbe Omer Kona, Vachomem Lo Kona. Omar Rabbi Yochanan v'kulon b'shtar. And as we saw before, all of these ha'omers that we saw are actually written out, and the shtar, the document, is given over to the receiver. Tanu Rabbanan, ha'omer osisi ploni avdi ben churin. Now, in this source, we have a mivneh heading on the side, a structural note, which reads, Bebraisa number 3, Roman numerals 1 and 2 that are found, you can see these numbers are in diamonds in the source, Shnei Mikrim, Echad Shel Eved U'Sheni Shel Soda. The first one involves a slave, the second one involves a field. You'll notice that the word Chayshinon is dot underlined, and the expression Hidas Baldin has a squiggle underline. Oftentimes in Gemara markings, we use markings simply to show the symmetry, the balance, the of structure between sources or within sources, so that the case represented by Roman numeral 1 and Roman numeral 2 are very similar structurally. Now the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Ha'imer Osisi Ploni Avdi Ben Chorin. The owner claims, I made so-and-so, a slave of mine, a free man. Vahu Omer, and the slave says, Lo Asoani. He didn't make me free. Chayshinon Shema Zika Loi Al Yadei Acher. We suspect that the slave really is freed. You'll ask, well, how does the slave not know about it? Because the owner gave a Get Chirus, a freedom document, Get Shichur, to a third party to accept on behalf of the slave. So the slave wasn't aware of his being freed. That the transfer, the giving, the presentation of a Get Shichur to a third party on behalf of the slave is viewed as if the slave himself received it, legally speaking. The second case, Kosafti V'nosati Loi. I wrote a Shtar Shichur and I gave it to him. V'hu Omer Lo Kosavli V'lo Nosanli, and the slave denies that. Hiduas Baldin Kamea Edim Domi. The admission of the interested party, the Baldin, the litigant, or the party to the law, is like the testimony of 100 witnesses. Which means for us, Hoidos Baldin means the admission of the slave that he was not freed is very powerful. It's like the testimony of 100 witnesses. 100 witnesses, of course, is an expression. It means it's solid testimony that he was not freed. And the nafgamina, the practical legal ramification of this is that the owner could continue enslaving this slave. After all, the slave admitted he is still a slave. Ha'oimer nosati soda ploinis leploni. Someone says, I gave a particular field to so-and-so. Ha'oimer lo nosanli, he didn't give it to me. We suspect that maybe the field really was transferred to this particular receiver through the agency of a third party who received a title of deed of that field on behalf of this receiver. So when he claims, I didn't receive it, that is not solid for us. Maybe he did in fact receive it through the offices of a third party. Another case, Kosafti Venosati Lo. Here the owner says, like we saw above with the slave, I gave it to him. There's no third party here. The owner claims I wrote a shtar, wrote a document, and gave it to the receiver. V'lomer lo kosav v'lo nasali. And the receiver says, he never wrote and presented to me a title to the field. Ha'idoas baldin kamea edim domi. So the field is not considered owned by that receiver. Mi oichel peros. Who will consume the fruits? We just learned in the source a supposed receiver denies having received the field. In the meantime, the field is producing fruits. Who's considered the owner of those fruits? Rav Chisda Omar noisein oichel peros. The original owner consumes the fruits. V'raba Omar Mishalshin es haperos. We entrust the fruits to a sholish, a third party. And Rashi says, Naaman, he's trusted ad shiyov Elio, until Elio comes, the prophet Elijah, and tells us what to do. Velo pligi, there's no argument per se between Rav Chisda and Rabba. Ha be'abo, ha bevra. Rav Chisda's case applies to the father. Now, what do we mean by the father? If we look in Rashi, ha be'abo, ha bevra, in mekabel matona atzma b'chaim, if the original receiver of the gift is alive, Omar lo nosanli, and he says, he didn't give it to me. Naaman, he's believed when he's to say, he never gave it to me. And what happens? The original owner will consume the fruits. And who said the original owner? That was Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda is addressing a case where the original receiver is alive, claiming, I never received it. Rashi goes on, Avol, im mace, if the receiver died, uvenoyo marlonosan sode zu la'abo, and the son of the receiver says, this field was never given to my father, mishalshelin, we take the fruits and entrust them to a third party, deshema yavo edim, she mosra la'aviv v'ze lo yoda, witnesses might come and say that it was given to the father, and this son simply was unaware of that. So the fact that the son says it wasn't given to my father, that is not decisive. It's not absolute. We can't rely on that. We can't rely on that and then give the fruits to the original owner. But rather, it might very well have, yes, been transferred to his father without the child's knowledge. So in a case like that, where we have a doubt, so we say, Mishalshin, we entrust the fruits to a third party. The Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading, Eved Shaso Rabba Apotiki V'Shichro. We're going to discuss the case of a slave that was designated by its master to be a source of collection, a source of debt collection, in the event that the debt would not be paid up by cash. So the owner of the slave, who was a debtor, who he owes money because he had taken out a loan, he assigned his slave as an apotiki. Apotiki, apotekoi, it's an abbreviated expression, meaning that if I don't pay you cash, so then I'm designating or earmarking an alternative source of payment of the debt. In the meantime, the owner of the slave, we'll call it the borrower, he frees the slave, sets him free, making him a totally free, a Jew, regular Jew. Obviously, if you accept that at face value, the loan will not be able to be collected from that individual after he's set free. If you take a quick look at the Mishnah, you'll notice that we have a number of letters in the Mishnah, Aleph through Hey. Under the Mivneh heading, we indicate these letters, Aleph through Hey, Kitei HaMishnah, these are phrases, sections of the Mishnah, Shiitzutu, Behemshech HaGemara, they will be quoted as the Gemara goes on. The Oisim Oisi Oisi Ofiu Eitzel HaKeta HaToeim. And each letter that you see in the Mishnah will reappear in the Gemara, corresponding to that section of the Mishnah. As we get into the Gemara, you'll notice we have a bow tie marking, one, and if you skim ahead to Mem Aleph, Amid Aleph, you'll see at the upper part of that Amid, a second bow tie featuring Ula, first bow tie featuring Rav. These are Shnei Gishos, two approaches, Rav Ula, Lazbir HaMishnah. Rav will explain the Mishnah, and then later Ula will offer his explanation of the Mishnah. Bahemshech HaGemara Mevi'a Tzitutim HaMishnah. As the Gemara will unfold, it will cite the points mentioned in the Mishnah. U'mishaleves ha'hezbeirim shel Rav v'Ula. And it will weave together with the Mishnah citations Rav's explanation of each one of the phrases and then Ula's doing the same in his way, of course, in his different approach. Hopefully this will become much clearer when we look into the Gemara. First, the Mishnah. Eved, and by the way, when we read the Mishnah, we are not going to offer much explanation, because that, in fact, is the role of Rav and Ula, each one to offer their own explanation of what the Mishnah is saying. So for our purposes, the Mishnah is to be viewed as vague in and of itself. Eved shaso rabo apotiki lachirim, a slave that was determined or designated to be an apotiki, a source of collection of a debt to others that were collectors, they were creditors. Vishikro, and the slave was set free. Shura sadin, letter of the law, ein ho eved chayev klum. The slave has no obligations. Elo mitnei tikkun ha'olam, for the benefit of society. Kaifen es raboi, we force the master. The oisoise ben chorin, and he is made into a free man, which would mean that a document of freedom, a shtar shichur, would be prepared. The kaisiv shtar al domov, and then we could say a check would be written out. A shtar al domov means a document indicating an amount of money of value will then be written out, namely like an IOU. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer eino kosev elo mishachrer. He doesn't write, but rather the one who set free. Hopefully, this Mishnah was vague, because if you read it with clarity, then it's going to make it difficult to appreciate the two approaches. You'll already be locked into a certain mindset. So in this case, it's maybe a rare statement on our part, but we appreciate vagueness up till this point. The Gemara. Eved shaso rabo poti v'shichro. Mishichro. Who set the Eved free? The Mishnah described an Eved, a slave that was designated to be a source of collection and then was set free. Who set him free? Notice the Aleph here. This corresponds to the word shichro in the Mishnah. Omar Rav, Rabo Rishon, the original owner. The original owner is the borrower, the debtor, the one who owes the money. So the one who owed the money to pay off a loan that he had received or whatever, he happened to have owned a slave. He set him free. Shura sadin ein ho'eved chayav klum. And you notice the base here. The base corresponds to the base in the Mishnah. Letter of the law, the slave is not obligated to pay anything. Now, we say he's not obligated to pay l'rabo sheni. He's not obligated to pay the second master. The second master is a reference to the creditor. You see, what's happened in this case, someone owed money, apparently has no cash. The source of collection, the anticipated source of collection, was going to then be, in the absence of the cash, was going to be the slave. Now the slave has been set free. So the creditor, Rabo Sheni, can't collect from the slave, can't collect the slave as his means of payment. The slave, who is now set free, is not obligated to compensate the creditor. Kederova, based on Rova's teaching, the Omar Rova, Hektish Chometz V'Shichur, Mafkiin Midei Shiabud. We're not going to dwell on cases 1 and 2 of Hektish and Chometz. Rashi explains what they refer to. But for our purposes, we're going to focus on case 3. Shichur means the freeing of a slave. The slave had been, up till the point he was freed, earmarked or designated as a source of collection, so that the creditor, the Rabo Sheni, he had a shiabud, he had a lien on that slave. He had a claim to the slave. However, the act of shichur, the act of setting free, voids that claim. It dissolves it voids that claim. As a result, the Eved has no obligation to the creditor. Rashi elaborates Rashi on the Gemara commentary toward the lower part of the page, Shura Sadin Ein Hoeved Chayav Klum L'Rav Osheni. We read the Rashi. Shelohaya Gufo Konilo. We cannot say that the slave was owned by the creditor. Elo Mishuba. They had a lien on it. The Osi Shichru Mafkir Shibud Kedurava. The setting of free dissolves that lien, as Rava teaches. So that's letter of the law. Hello, the Gemara goes on. Hello, Mipnei Tikuna Oilam. This is a quote from the Gimel, the third section of the Mishnah. For public welfare, Mipnei Tikuna Oilam. What's the problem that nevertheless exists and we have to solve it? Shema Yimtzeinu Bashuk. We're afraid that the creditor might spot the eved that was earmarked as a means of, as a source of payment for the money that he had loaned out. The creditor might meet up with the slave in the market. We're at the top of Daf Mem Aleph. The Yoimar Loi, and the creditor will say to the slave, "Ah, Avdi Ato, you're my slave." Technically, he's not a slave. He's free. We saw the original master, the borrower, set him free. As such, he married a Jewish woman, had children, who are full-fledged Jews. And now you have the Rav Osheni meeting up with the slave, a former slave, that is, saying, "Hey, you're my slave." People are going to think that he really is a slave, and that his children are slaves. It's called Moitzi Laz Albonov, as Rashi says. So, as to solve that problem, Kaifin es Rabbi Sheni. Notice this Dalit corresponds to the Dalit in the Mishnah. That means we then force when the Mishnah said Kaifin es Rabbo. By the way, the word Rabbo was used in the Mishnah. So that's the first time you see the word Rabbo. Who is it a reference to, according to Rav? It's a reference to the creditor. We force his master. Not really his master, but Rav explains. Rabbo is the Sheni, the creditor, the one who was trying to collect the debt, trying to collect the slave as a means of payment, but unsuccessful. We force him, that Sheni, and notice Hey, corresponding to the mission of Oisa Oisai Ben Chirin, the Koisev Eved Shtar Al Domov. This was, of course, all in the Mishnah. That's why we have this all in a frame. Because of Tikkun Olam, we force the second fellow, the creditor, to free the slave, Oisoso ben Chorin, v'koisiv eved shtar al domov, and the eved who gained his freedom and really was at a loss to the creditor. So, as we said before, because of Tikkun HaOlam, because of for public, out of public concern that life should go on smoothly without the contention, so we tell the slave that you should write an IOU, Keneged in accordance with the value of you as a slave. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer Ein Hoeved Koisev, the slave doesn't have to write an IOU. Elo Mishachrer Koisev, the original owner who set him free, he has to write a shtara, a check. He has to write a document indicating that I will pay you the money. Rashi says on the top line, Elo Hamishachrer Koisev Shtar LeBal Chov Al Domov. He has to write a shtar for the value of the slave. We'll assume for right now that the slave corresponded to the value of the money owed, and the borrower will now write a document indicating an IOU of the value of the slave. And why? Because he was mazik. Rashi says, "Hoyo v'hizik shibudo yishalim." Since he ruined, he affected the source of collection. The shibud was the lien that the creditor had on the slave, and as a result of the shichur, he ruined that lien. Pay for what you've done. Pay for the damages. B'mai komiflagi. You'll see that this is a repeat style, and we have a double underline marking here and later when we get to Ulo's version. In both cases, B'mai komiflagi, we're going to be analyzing what's the underlying point of machloikis between the Tanakama and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. So the Tanakama said that the Rabbo Sheni, so as not to call the slave my slave, we have the Rabbo Sheni free the slave, so he won't be able to call him his own slave anymore. And the slave, according to the Tanakama, writes an IOU to the owner, to the creditor, that is. B'mai komiflagi, b'mazik shibudo shechaveru komiflagi. What is the law with regard to someone that imposes damage upon the lien that someone else had on a particular property? The mor savar chayav. Reb Shimon says that if you cause damage to the lien that someone has against you, well, you have to pay for that. And therefore, Reb Shimon Leo said that the original owner who caused that damage by setting the slave free, depriving the creditor of collecting the slave as his means of payment, so you have to pay for that. That's called mazik, damaging shibud shavar, the lien that the fellow man had on you. And umor savar, the Tanakama holds potter. We cannot impose damage payments on the original owner. Ah, what about the fact that the Tanakama says the slave has to pay? Well, the slave is an ultimate beneficiary of his having been freed. So, you are benefiting, pay for the benefit, and therefore the slave pays the creditor his original slave value. Itmar nami, and it's taught likewise, hamazik shibudo shechavero, when one imposes damage upon someone's lien, bonu lemachlokas Rav Shlomo Leo v'Rabbanan. This brings us into a Tanaic controversy between Rav Shlomo Leo and the Rabbanan. Is the damager expected to pay? Ula Omar Mishichro. Now we're going to go over the Mishnah again, but this time through the eyes of Ula, and the same lettering scheme where each letter corresponds to where it originally appeared in the Mishnah. So Ula says Mishichro. When we opened the Mishnah, we saw Eved Shaso Rabo Apodi Achem Mishichro, an Eved that was designated to be a source of collection for a debt, and he freed him. Well, of course, the slave is the one being freed, but who freed the slave? So Ula says, Rabbo Shemi. The creditor freed the slave. Shuras hadin ein hoevet chayev klum, b'mitzvah. So he has nothing to do with monetary matters, but rather, the letter of law says that the slave is not obligated to fulfill mitzvahs like a regular ben chorin. Why not? Because the shichur, the freedom, is meaningless. The Rabbo Sheni, the creditor, the one to whom the debt was owed, he's not the owner of the slave. At best, he has a shibud, he has a lien on the slave. He's not the owner of the slave. So his freeing of the slave is a meaningless expression of freedom. It's true that when a slave is freed, he becomes a ben chorna, becomes a regular Jew. But in this case, the freedom is meaningless. So the slave doesn't become a regular Jew, so he's not chayav in all the mitzvahs as a regular Jew. He's chayav in the mitzvahs a slave is chayav in, like a woman is chayav in, mitzvahs, all mitzvahs except for misaseh shazman groma. Elam ipnei tikkun olam. However, there's a public concern. Shere yotzalov shame ben chorin. Once word went out that this slave has been set free, so there's a name, a reputation that's been established. Not all reputations are truthful and honest, but there is a reputation. That's what happened over here. The Shem Ben Chorin, the title, the name of being a free man, has been attached to this individual, to this slave. What do we do now? Well, Koifenes Rabo Rishon, we force the original master. Here, Rabo, his master, It's maybe more appropriate according to Ula, according to Ula's interpretation, and we'll see this later in the Gemara, that Rabbo is more accurately referring to the original owner, the Oisoise ben Chorin, and he, the original master, will set him free to authenticate the reputation that had been established. The Kaisev Eved Shtar al Domov, and the slave who now is truly free will write an IOU to the original owner with regard to if the value of the slave exceeded the amount that the original owner owed. So the slave will write an IOU to the original owner to pay for we'll say the original owner's loss as a result of his having to set the slave free. The original owner, true, he owed a certain amount of money. The slave, assuming he was worth much more than the original loan. So the slave will compensate the original owner for that excess value. Reb Shimon Omer Eino Kosev Elo Mishachrer Kosev. Reb Shimon says the slave doesn't write the IOU for that excess amount, but rather the Rabbo Sheni, the second fellow, the creditor, who he got involved with something maybe he shouldn't have done in the first place. That means he set someone free that wasn't really his to set free, creating a false reputation, a false status in the eyes of the public. So, true, money was owed to him, but the amount that was owed to him was less than the value of the slave. The original owner is losing out that balance, that extra amount. So who compensates the original owner? Not, like the Tanakhama said, that the slave is expected to do that, but rather the creditor is to do that. Bemai kol miflegi. What is the underlying point of disagreement between the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel? Whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel said that the Meshachrer, the Rabbo Sheni, writes the IOU, the Tanakhama said the slave writes the IOU. The point of difference is behezek shena nikur kamiflegi, imposing damage that's not recognizable. Mor sovar, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, shmei hezek, even though it's not recognizable, it's legal damage. It's not recognizable. You have other places in the Shas where you have someone, let us say, defiled someone's pure food through having some source of defilement contact the food. Especially if it's truma or something that needs to be kept in purity, that's a damage, but you don't see any physical change. Here, you have hezek sheino nikur, the original act, according to Ula's approach of the creditor setting the slave free under a false freedom, but attaching to him the name or the title of being a free man. That's a form of damage. It's not nicker. It's not something that's obvious. Do you have to pay for that? So Reb Shimon Gamliel says yes. Shmei hezek means it is considered a damage that you have to pay for. Umor Sava, the Tanakhama says lo shmei hezek. It's not a damage that one would have to pay for. So we can't impose payment upon the Rabbo Sheni, but we do impose payment that the slave, who is the beneficiary of what took place, so he pays for his now being a free man. In the next couple lines of the Gemara, we want to know why each one, Ula and Rav, said like they said and not like the other one. Ula, my time aloma karav. Why didn't Ula adopt Rav's approach? Omar loch. Ula will tell you. Sheni. Rabo ikoris lay. You see, we have an arrow to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. Look at the corresponding arrow at the top line. We were still involved with Rav's approach. He explained the Dalid section of the Mishnah where it said, Kaifenes Rabbo, we forced the Rabbo to set him free. How did Rav explain the word Rabbo, which means his master, the slave's master? He referred the term Rabbo to the creditor. Ula says, what do you mean? The creditor is considered, is titled the master of the slave? That's not true. It's totally inaccurate. So Ula doesn't like Rav's approach. For Rav, my time alomar kula. Why doesn't Rav adopt Ula's approach? Omar loch. So Rav says, Shemi Meshachrer kor slave. Meshachrer means the one who frees. Free, the freer of the slave. According to Ula's approach, use the arrow that you see to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. Ula explained that the Meshachrero of the Mishnah was the creditor. Rav says, yeah, how can you call the creditor the freer of the slave? In order to free a slave, you have to be the owner of the slave. The second fellow, the creditor, he's not the owner of the slave. So why? So you can't refer to him the term Meshachrer. Hence, Rav doesn't accept Ula's approach. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.